Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Hernandez. Chris Hernandez joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is I Take What I Want by Memphis Soul Great Sam and Dave. The Dave, in this instance, Dave Prater, born on this day in 1937, died in 1988. Tune that out to the victors every night in NBA playoff basketball.
Yeah, so last night we didn't have anything electric happen, really. We didn't have anything stunning happen. It was a basketball game, and as you quickly identified, this is in your discerning eye, the Warriors aren't that good without Steph.
Yeah, Warriors just don't have the juice without Steph Curry. That is not going to change, I don't think. They, when you go back to San Francisco, maybe they'll get a split there. Maybe they can make it to a game six and get Curry back. But that team just does not have the juice without him. I did not think it was particularly impressive performance by Minnesota.
No, maybe Ant was a little hobbled with the ankle, but no, not particularly. Did what they had to do, obviously. Felt like Steve Kerr was searching. He played 14 players in the first half. And then we had the Draymond. We had the Draymond incident where he elbows Naz Reid. Your thoughts of that and then subsequently berates the officials and no further technical.
Yeah, it's wild that a basketball player who is so brilliant, and he really is, he's a great basketball player, is so utterly tiresome. And it's just, I think a lot of people are sick of it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the double standard and the long leash he gets. It's like every game he's doing stuff that would get other players even worse. You would think there would be more scrutiny on him based on his past and his track record, and instead it feels like there's more leniency for him because of it. And he does not get technicals for things that other players would almost certainly get technicals for in terms of berating officials and stuff like that. And it almost feels like the first tech is like a shield for him because they don't want to throw him out of a game.
Right. Yeah.
And then he just sort of keeps going nuts. And so it's beyond tiresome. And it's tiresome than it is for him. It's also tiresome the way that it's sort of not only the way the league has a double standard for it, the way that the Warriors organization and Steve Kerr basically excuses it, the way like TV announcers like Stan Van Gundy's been bad about this, excusing it, and it's just all tiresome.
It also we've reached a point now where we've had great basketball, we've had some just truly electric endings. And yet it is also true that two of these four series, it feels like, are being decided by injury.
Well, I mean, that's not unusual in playoff basketball. There's sort of a war of attrition thing that happens. We've seen it happen to the Grizzlies.
Yep.
Now, when it's happened to the Grizzlies, it's hard to know whether it would have changed outcomes or not. Like, you know, some of the issues they've had in recent years have been like you're sort of playing from behind anyway. Grizzlies have benefited in the past. The one year they went to the conference finals, it was, you know, would they have gotten there without the Russell Westbrook injury? And so that's sort of, you know, 82 game season, and then it takes four rounds of playoffs. Like, that's going to happen.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right. You did your the second half of your countdown with the Grizzlies roster. We had the back half, the 18 through 10 yesterday. Today we have 9 through 1 as you rank the players and their value sort of going forward. And I urge people to read it. I have tweeted it out. It's up at the Daily Memphian. But we'll start with Vince, who in the end, one of the things you said is the Grizzlies assumed too much. Do you think they did? We did? Who assumed? Like,
There were different points in time in which assumptions were made, right?
Right.
I think the Grizzlies were guilty of making it. When you get to the trade deadline, he's just come back from a second injury in season, right?
Right.
And so that's not an assumption made coming out of last season, which I made some assumptions then.
Yeah.
It was an assumption the team made in the moment where they have him. They see him in practices. They have their medical staff look at him. And I think they should have had, and maybe they did have, a decent grasp of like how likely he was to get back to 100%. And so I think, you know, whether the assumptions earlier on were wrong or not, it's hard to know. But the assumption at the trade deadline that he was going to be able to that he was going to take that spot that at one time, you know, maybe Marcus Smart had, that's where I think the most faulty assumption was.
So what do we assume of next year?
I don't assume a lot. In terms of this list, and this is what I know we talked about part one yesterday, But, you know, when I'm doing this and I'm ranking them, and the ranking stuff is not that important. It's like the parlor game.
Right.
But there are certain points along the way where I sort of spend more time thinking about the order. And the G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams, which was sort of the breaking point in the two pieces, was one of those. And I ended up with Vince higher than G.G. because they're both under contract. G.G. has more upside, right? But it's not about long-term player career. It's about value to the Grizzlies. And they're both under contract for two more years. They're roughly the same number. And the Grizzlies are trying to win. And I still believe that Vince Williams is a quality rotation player in the NBA if he's healthy. In fact, I have not really much doubt about that. But I don't think the Grizzlies go into their offseason planning thinking that he's going to be a top 7-8 guy. Maybe they think he's going to be the 9th, 10th, 11th guy, right? And if he becomes more than that, great. But in terms of how they plan to construct their team, I don't think they think of him as more than that. And in fact, I had him 9th on this list.
It's interesting you say that, because you have 9 on this list. In the end, you basically have 9 rotation players, right? I mean, you have more than that because you're going to have injuries, and the Grizzlies sometimes historically played 10. But it is right. Sort of interesting. You got 9 players here on this list. You got a mix of bigs and wings and whatever. They're a little short on wings here. Do you assume, like, might these be the top 9? Or does someone have to move off? Or for someone to be added, will there be someone else, do you think, in the top 9 players when we start next year, in a top 9 players on this rotation? And if so, will one of these guys who's on this list of your 9 here be moved out?
Well, I don't think they have to be moved out necessarily for someone to be moved in. I think they can be moved down, right? You could easily call Vince Williams your 10th guy in the pecking order as you're going into training camp or whatever. But I do think the team's goal certainly should be to add a player this summer who you would slot in on the list we're talking about today. I think that should pretty clearly be the goal of the team this summer. Even if you don't, like, you know, make a major, even if you don't, like, quote unquote, break up the core or whatever, you could still be mechanisms to add a player who you think would slide in on this list.
And then the other thing is, and I want to combine the Vince conversation a little bit with the Edie, who you have at 4, because there's assumptions and there are projections, right? Assumptions sound irresponsible. Projections sound like what a team does, right? So, because I was reading what you wrote about Edie and what they expect of him. And I was thinking, are they assuming too much? Like, where is the line there? I don't think it felt like a projection last year when we were thinking about what Vince would be this year, right?
This is a different kind of season than the last season. And so, I mean, last season was sort of like this almost like, you know, lab experiment of basketball where the basketball stopped mattering at a certain point and you're just like running guys through and this season was very real. Like this whole season was real. They won 48 games. They were in a playoff race. They played 2 play-in games and 4 playoff games. And you saw Zach Edey in the context of like real basketball all during the regular season and through 6 postseason games. And so I think that is a little bit more of a stronger foundation to go off of. I think there's just a certain talent level and a certain like rareness to some of his attributes. And so I don't think it's a blind hope to think about what Zach Edey's going to be in year 2. It's not a guarantee, but I think it's, you know, the idea that he's going to be a double-double quality starting center next season and be an elite offensive rebounder, elite screener, or he's going to shoot a certain percentage from the floor, all that is likely, which doesn't mean it's guaranteed.
So Vince was 9, and then Brandon Clark was 8. You had interesting stats there, and I urge people to go read them. I won't go through all of them. But for whatever the concern was about and there was concern about whether he would be the same level of player after the Achilles injury, now he's had what is a lesser injury, a sprained knee, I guess it is what it was?
Yes. It's certainly a lesser injury. I mean, the hope is that it's a much lesser injury, but that makes some assumptions about his recovery.
I don't know. Like, given the way that it was a little rough at the beginning, but given the way he bounced back, don't you have some real confidence that he will be Brandon Clark next year? You know, the very effective basketball player?
I do have a decent degree of confidence in that. I think the Grizzlies have a decent degree of confidence in that. I think and this is sort of what you alluded to and what I wrote about, it's very impressive because he was not the same guy physically. I do think he was a little bit diminished physically, but he was more diminished physically than he was diminished in performance. Like, he found a way to be just as good with slightly less explosiveness. You know, he dunked the ball a lot less, but the ball went through the hoop just as much, right?
Right.
And that's sort of what matters. Like, he blocked shots less, he got steals more, and he was better defensively maybe than ever, a little bit more perimeter-oriented. You know, so we think about the play him switching out on Anthony Edwards to get a stop, right? I think he found ways to be super effective, even with slight tweaks to the way he played. And I think that speaks to, I think when we thought about Brandon Clark coming into the NBA as just like a pure athlete, like that guy just like jumps higher or gets off the floor quicker than everybody else. And that's how he's good at 6'7", 6'8". And there's something to that. I think what we've seen over time is he's just a really skilled basketball player. He's not skilled in like the shooting threes and fancy dribble moves. He's skilled in the having touch, to having a spatial awareness, to knowing, you know, to be in the right place at the right time, to feel his way into open spaces offensively, to get to the right spots defensively. He's just a really good basketball player. And so I think if he can come back to be, you know, close to what he was physically last season, then there's no reason he can't be a really good basketball player for the Grizzlies next season. I do think there's a reason, and this is another point of, like, for me, debate for myself between him and Santi Aldama. I do think there's enough risk there in terms of his durability, in terms of the minutes he can play, in terms of his ability to make it through a full 82 games and into the playoffs, because that really hasn't happened in a while.
Santi's 7, and as you point out, this is a new horizon for the Grizzlies, front office as a restricted free agent.
Yeah, Santi Aldama is the first-round pick under Zach Kleiman, and I don't just mean picks made by Zach Kleiman. I mean players who have come to this point in their arc since Zach Kleiman has taken over, which includes Jared Jackson, who he did not select. But he's the first Grizzlies first-round pick under Kleiman's watch who has gotten to this point in their contract, meaning everyone else has either signed an early extension a year before, like Jaren, like John Morant, Desmond Bane, Brandon Clark, or the Grizzlies have decided before this point to move them instead of even getting to this point. And so they moved David Roddy, they moved Zion Williams, they moved Jake LaRavia. So I think the first one they've taken all the way to this point of restricted free agency, which will be an interesting window into like how Kleiman handles that, because this will be a first for him.
What does that say about Santi, by the way, that he reached this point?
It says that he's sort of in the middle of those guys, right? And Jake LaRavia should have been the same thing. Like, and Kleiman admitted basically it was a mistake to decline the option, and decline the option is why they ended up trading him. So Jake probably should have been in the same category. But it's a mid-grade thing in that they're not dead certain. Like with John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jared Jackson, and Brandon Clark, they were dead certain about how much they valued those guys, how much they wanted them. They basically decided Roddy and Zaire weren't going to work out. And so Santi's sort of in the middle. He's a guy who's good. He's a guy they like. But, like, you know, what's the right price for that, right? What's the right role? There's a little bit more uncertainty there with him in terms of value and role. And so that'll make an interesting summer, I think, for him. And I'll get into him more in more detail. This is sort of a starting point.
Right.
Sort of a jump. I can jump off into, you know, all these players individually, or some of them individually, a little bit more as we move on.
The restricted thing means that they'll make a qualifying offer, presumably, and then they have the right to match an offer that anyone else would make and retain him that way.
And what the qualifying offer does is it's a sheet of paper that he can have at any point he wants to. He can sign it and take that money. Right. And so you make that offer because that gives the player a backstop. And because you've given the player the backstop of, I think it's like one year, $5 or $6 million, because you've given that player that backstop, now you have the rights to match other teams' offers.
You raise the possibility that he is someone who you could see being involved in a sign and trade. How would that work?
Well, it can work any kind of different ways. But if another team, if a team that's interested in him, especially a team that like doesn't have cap space, so maybe a team that doesn't have the cap space beside him, but really wants him, and you know, they're telling his agent, look, we'll give you $15 million, but we don't have $50 million in cap space. But we're willing to work with the Grizzlies to send them something they want in order to do a sign and trade. So we can give you this money. Like, that's one way that happens. I don't necessarily think that's what everyone's looking for, but I can see that ultimate outcome. It would not surprise me.
One of the tricky things about Santi, it seems to me, is I don't get the sense, I would speak for the fan base writ large, that there's great enthusiasm for him now because he sort of fits into this. He doesn't bring, he's not particularly physical, and he's not particularly good defensively, and those were issues for the team. And I think those are also things that, you know, even Zach Kleiman says, we know that
Kleiman and Isolo both, like, you know, it was definitely a talking point. Like, yeah, they came out and said, like, this city loves gritty players and we like gritty players.
And he's not this, that.
And, like, and neither of them volunteered his name, right? Maybe that's just oversight. But, like, you know, Zach Kleiman was up there talking about Cam Spencer. He didn't say anything about Santi.
On the other hand, so you're like, well, he doesn't bring the physicality that they need or the grittiness that they need or the defense that they need. He also does bring them the shooting that they need and the explosiveness, at least, whatever, the ability to freaking go up and dunk out, get the alley-oops that they also need. Like,
I mean, go look at the box score from game 4 against the Thunder. Like, guess who was one of the guys who was out there making shots and making plays? It was Santi Aldama.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I don't think they should be in the business of letting good young talent walk out the door for nothing.
Right.
So I think they need to re-sign Santi Aldama. Unless there's a sign, and I would not be doing a sign and trade with him that just, like, you know, creates a trade exception, like which is what they did with Dylan Brooks, right?
Right.
If there's a sign and trade that can bring me back a different player, I will stick into my rotation. Yeah, I'll entertain that. But otherwise, like, I'm trying to re-sign Santi Aldama, and, like, you know, you can always trade him later. But I'm trying to keep that talent on my team.
I don't know how much you wrestled with this. But I did ask Jeffrey about Jalen Wells and Scottie Pippen and how he would rank them, and he had them. He would rank Wells ahead of Pippen, and I think I would have instinctively, and you did not.
I think that's probably consensus. That's another point where I thought about it. I think the consensus would probably be Wells.
So you had Pippen 5 and Wells 6. Why?
The contract stuff is pretty similar. I think Pippen is a higher upside player, and we just saw this dude put 58 points in two competitive playoff games against Oklahoma City Thunder. I think Pippen's a higher upside player. I think he's, even though Wells was a starter all season, I actually think Pippen's a little bit more secure in his role as the third guard, like a heavy minute, high usage third guard, six man type. Whereas I could see Wells getting displaced as the starter on the wing, and then, you know, you look up and he's like 8th, 9th, 10th in the rotation kind of thing. I think Wells was such a good find, and people like him so much for very good reasons. I like him a lot too. But I think people have sort of overrated his game a little bit to this point. Now, his game can change. He was just a rookie. But he ended up shooting like 35% from 3, which is pretty average on the season. And he played good defense, but it was a, like, you know, basically, like, you know, face guard your man all the time defense. And he didn't, like, he athletically, like, he doesn't do much in terms of rebounding, doesn't do much in terms of blocks and steals and deflections. He's not really a ball handler. Like, he's sort of like, you know, the calm version of Dylan Brooks in a way, which is sort of what I wrote about.
I thought it was hilarious that, because there's such different human beings. Yeah. I thought it was a wonderfully apt. You compared him to Dylan Brooks. Why?
He plays the same defensive role. Yeah. This is what Dylan did. Dylan would guard 1 through 3, and he would just, like, I'm in your shorts for all 48 minutes, and I'm ignoring everything else. Dylan also got very little steals, very little blocks, deflections. Dylan didn't really rebound. So he played the same kind of defensive role with the same kind of tenacity and the same kind of physical limitation, just with less gapping and bumping and histrionics. But offensively, they're both kind of low-efficiency scorers. Like, the difference is that, like, Wells sort of knew his role, and he would not seek out bad shots, whereas Dylan loved bad shots. But otherwise, like, they were both like, are they good three-point shooters? We're not quite sure. Maybe, sometimes, you know?
Is it interesting, of course, both these guys were good finds. Like, Scottie Pippen, great find.
100%.
Wells, great find. So we may love our great finds, but to the extent that we're overrating one of them because they're a great find or not, they're both great finds. Is Wells, in terms of his shooting, you pointed out, it started much better than it ended.
Yeah.
I don't know. He has a history, though, of being a very good shooter, right?
Well, let me be clear. There's a difference between, like, what has been established and what you believe.
Yes.
I believe he's a good shooter. I do. I believe in his shooting. Because I see the form. I see the composure. I think he's going to be one of the things I wrote is, like, he needs to, given his other limitations, he sort of needs to be a 40% three-point shooter to be a viable starter. But I think he's probably going to be a 40% three-point shooter. Like, I believe in the shooting. I think the 38% shooting before the break is more real than the 30% shooting after the break. So I believe in it, but it's not, like, established. And Pippen is now taking something like 300 NBA three-point attempts across three seasons and is at 40%. I think Pippen is a little bit more established as a shooter, actually.
And in terms of Pippen, do you believe in his capacity for improvement as a point guard and the turnover issues that he's had?
Yeah, I do. I don't. There's a limit to how important that is as long as he's playing for the Grizzlies and John Morant's on the team. The Grizzlies don't need him to be a starting point guard except for the 20 games that John misses.
Yeah.
Right. I do think it's important for him to just bring the turnovers down a little bit, bring the fouls down a little bit, just turn the dial a little bit on those things. But I don't think those deficiencies are existential if he's doing the three things he's good at, which is making threes, getting to the rim, and D-ing up. And I think those three qualities he has, if those three qualities he showed down the stretch are real, I think that's the kind of package that can make somebody, get them in a six-man of the year conversation.
All right, we're going to save the top four for next week. It's a long summer, Chris. Thanks very much. Yeah. Have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day. Yeah, okay. Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You can read it. You can read his piece over at the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break. We got Bill Dries on the other side. Bill Dries has written a series, kind of a remarkable series, about Tom Lee. I had no idea all of these things about Tom Lee. I knew he'd saved some people from the river, but I want to talk to Bill about that. We have other things to get into as well. Oh, before that, let me just tell you that, they've got a women's department over at Oak Hall, and they clothes are just as stunning. In fact, I went in there once, and I had to get a Christmas present for someone, and I just threw myself on the mercy. I said, "What?" That's what I did. I just walked in and said, because here's the thing. I know that anything I've ever purchased from Oak Hall or anything I've ever given from Oak Hall is a smash hit, right? And so I just walked into the women's department and I said, I need to get a gift. Help. And they gave me whatever. And you know what? This would happen to be a Christmas gift. It wasn't a Mother's Day gift, but it happened to be a smash hit. But while you're in there, this would be a great time to check out their polos, their sports shirts, the new pants that I got. I just drove over earlier this week to pick them up. And my alterations were ready. My two pairs of pants from Brax, the single most comfortable pants I have ever worn in my life. Perfect weekend to get in. We got barbecue. We got barbecue coming up. We got a lot of things coming up this spring and summer. Get yourself ready for all of it while you're getting some for mom at Oak Hall. Bill Dries coming up next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Bill Dries. Bill Dries writes for the Daily Memphian. Legendary news reporter at the Daily Memphian. And he's done a spectacular series on Tom Lee, which I would urge you to read over at the Daily Memphian. It was 100 years ago yesterday that Tom Lee rescued 32 from the Mississippi. And Bill joins me now. Welcome, Bill. How are you?
I'm just fine. Just fine. Glad to be with you.
So his voice is a little under the weather. I wanted him anyway. So we appreciate you. We appreciate you soldiering through. So tell me this. How did you become fascinated by this? I mean, is it a 7-part series? I lost count at some point that you produced on Billy.
It's 4 parts with about 7 sidebars.
Right. So yeah.
That's a lot of copy.
It was a lot of copy. So take me through 100 years ago yesterday. How did these people, and I've read the pieces, so I sort of know, but it's the M.E. Norman was the name of the steamship. And it was out there with the Choctaw, was the other steamship. Who was on it? What were they doing?
You had a convention of engineers in the city. And what they were doing was, and this is not something that is a tourist draw by any means, but there were flood control measures south of the city on the river that this group of engineers went to sea, and it was just below the state line with Mississippi on the Arkansas side of the river. So the 2 boatloads went down there. They actually got off the boats and walked around on these revetments. They're basically willow mats that were supposed to stop the river from eroding the shoreline. So they give it a look, and they get back on the boats. The Choctaw leaves to come back to Memphis without any problems and actually gets around the bend of the river about the time that the Norman tries to pull out and starts rolling from side to side and then capsizes.
By the way, were all these people white? Was everyone on the whole ship white, or were there black employees, or was we know Tom Lee is obviously African-American, but who
right.
Is this a largely white cast we're dealing with?
Yes, largely white. These were professional folks, you know, pillars of the community, and their boat rolled over.
And why?
The investigation never came to an absolute conclusion on this. The guesses were that somehow or another, the tanks that would fuel the motor of the boat were switched from steam to gasoline as they were backing out, and that's what caused the boat to roll over. The boat was full of people, but it wasn't overcrowded. So that may have been a slight factor, but probably not the one that cast the die on this.
It's interesting, though. You mentioned that more people got on the Norman than the Choctaw. You wrote this in the piece, and that they, in the end, had to take a whole bunch of life jackets from the Choctaw to the Norman before they launched, and that how does one even know this? That one little boy sprinted away from the boat saying, I can just see myself. I'm not getting on that boat, basically. And he was prescient in the end. This is not the little boy who subsequently died.
Right. Yeah, no, it was Lee Heidinger who was going on his first boat ride that day with his dad and with his grandmother. And they lived on Vinton Avenue. And he, as they were getting ready to get in the car to come downtown, Lee just started crying and ran back in the house. And his dad ran in after him and said, what's going on? And he said, that boat's going to sink.
Oh, my God.
And his dad said, come on, it's just your first boat ride. We'll go.
Oh, my God.
And now, I talked to Mr. Heidinger years later.
Really?
Very gracious. I talked to him two or three times. And so I asked him specifically about that. And he said, no. I didn't have any premonitions. If I had premonitions, you know, I'd be a very rich man today.
Right, about all kinds of things.
He said, I just didn't want to go on the boat. I'd never been on one before. I have to say, he was in World War II as an adult, and he had to ride on boats then, and he told me he wasn't too crazy about that.
I can imagine. This is an interesting time, by the way. This is 1925. The Galloway Golf Course opening just about then. Rhodes was moving here. It was then called Southwestern, was moving here from Clarksville. Crosstown just opening. The Peabody just opening. Fascinating. And you put it in great context in your pieces. What was Tom Lee doing on the river?
He worked for a company called C.H. Hunter Company. And what C.H. Hunter did was they made the willow mats that the engineers went to look at. The mats were so big that there was actually a shortage of willow branches for it. So the head of the company, Charles Hunter, went out on one of the motor launches with Tom Lee in Helena, the Helena area, to look for new areas of willows in the river and by the river to use for the mats. So they did that. They found some areas, and then Tom Lee dropped off Hunter at the company headquarters in Helena. And then he was coming back up the river to come home to Memphis.
And sees the boat go down and makes five? How many trips was it? Saving people, plucking them out of the water? I can only imagine what that scene was like.
Yeah. He actually passed the boat at the bend in the river and saw it starting to roll and kept on watching it. And when it flipped, he went full speed back to the boat. Now, over the years, the number of trips he made were five, maybe three, you know, things got kind of mixed up in the telling of this over so many years. So we went with the first interview that he did the next day in Memphis. That was in the Commercial Appeal. As a matter of fact, interviewed by a guy named Turner Catledge, who's a very big figure in journalism, who went on to become the first executive editor of the New York Times.
Really?
So in the 1925 day after interview, Lee said five trips for sure that he made.
It's kind of remarkable, by the way. This really was a piece of history that you wrote. Again, people can read it over at the Daily Memphian. What are the sources here? We know now some, I didn't realize you'd actually talked to at least one of the survivors yourself at one point. But how does one assemble these pieces?
Well, what I did was I went through the Commercial Appeal and the Evening Senator. That was an afternoon paper here. By the way, Memphis had probably three to four daily newspapers here at the time.
Right.
So I went through the Evening Senator and the Commercial Appeal, the reporting at the time, and both papers in the 1920s tended to just do verbatim what they were told when they reported on things like this. And then I went through interviews over the years after that. I went through my own interviews, talking with relatives of some of the survivors. And all of those were over a period of about 30 years.
So Tom Lee is out there making these trips, rescuing these folks. Did I read it correctly? He himself could not swim?
Yes. He could not swim. I mean, at any moment, one of the people or more in the river could easily have panicked and pulled him in without, you know, without any hesitation at all, because it's what people do when they're
right,
drowning.
Desperate, right. They reach out. That's staggering. So he heroically and calmly, I gather, rescues all these folks. One of the things that struck me was reading it. They were sufficiently, this was pretty remote from Memphis. And so when he brought them to shore, they were so far away from shore, I mean, from Memphis, like, it's not like all of Memphis saw this happening. This was down in the Mississippi, on the other side of the Mississippi line. And they, you wrote that a guy named George Foster, so there they are, you know, beached and, you know, so swept up on the shore, rescued by Tom Lee. George Foster had to take a mule 7 miles to a telephone. Is that right? There were, I guess there was telephone at that point. And then he called the police, the Commercial Appeal, and his wife in that order. But once they were, quote unquote, rescued, they still sort of had to be rescued again, it felt like, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. George Foster, he worked at an architecture firm, you know, and all of these folks, as I said, were professional people. But George Foster was one organized guy who really liked the Commercial Appeal, I think. So he gets on shore, and his first instinct, of course, is to call for help.
Right.
So he sees these two guys working in a field on the Mississippi side, and he asks them to borrow their mule. So the mule gets him some of the way. He actually had to walk, had to cross a pond by walking across on a down tree, too, and finally got to a phone, which is why the city editor at the CA told him to go back and wait for the folks to rescue him, because they were going to have to build a bonfire for people to know where they were on the river. This was in the woods, in the sticks.
Amazing. So Tom Lee was then hailed as a hero, appropriately, immediately, I gather. It didn't like take any time for him to be recognized as a hero that he was. It's kind of striking, though. So I gather, on the one hand, hailed as a hero, the Engineers Club then supported him in a house, helped him live in a house, like, I guess, for the rest of his days. And yet, like, it's not like he had some gilded existence after this. He went from this job, and he went from this job to the next job that the city gave him because of his heroic stature was as a garbage collector.
Yeah, he had a job with the city, and he got it largely through the influence of the Engineers Club and by E.H. Crump, the political boss of the city, who also helped to raise the money for it. But yeah, city government, a city job was preferred because of the stability of it, even a job as a garbage collector. But yeah, that was part of his reward. And it was hard labor. It was hard, dirty labor.
Died of prostate cancer in 1952, I think you said, right? Yes, 1952. In terms of, and we got to wrap this up here in a minute, I'd urge people to read the series Over the Daily of Memphis. It's kind of it's a remarkable series. In terms of the ways that he has been honored, you had this obelisk that was up for forever that had the phrase, which is certainly seems problematic now, which said a worthy Negro is what this obelisk honoring him said. We did have the renaming of the park as Tom Lee Park. I guess that was in 1955. Now we have the new Tom Lee statue, and I gather his former house in Klondike area is going to be maybe preserved as a museum. I don't know. Thoughts on all that and the ways that he's been honored and is now being recognized for his heroism?
Yeah. Well, this weekend, Saturday, as a matter of fact, the Community Development Corporation in Klondike is having a centennial celebration, and they will talk a bit more about a historical marker going up outside the house, which is on North Mansfield Street. The wording of the monument is very much of the times, but that doesn't mean that it didn't rub black people the wrong way in 1954 when it went up. It's been one of those nagging things that's always been out there. Thanks to a pair of windstorms, one in 2013 and 2017, the obelisk was blown down twice.
And Mother Nature took care of that. We wouldn't do it, but yeah.
By the time it was blown down the first time, Tom Lee's ancestors were already pushing for at least obscuring that part of the monument, if not building a new one. You know, I mean, I was in the park enough in my youth to see black families walking in the park, enjoying it, and get to that monument, and you could see them read the wording. And when they got to the part that said, a very worthy Negro, you could tell. They would just look at it twice.
Right. Disgust.
And just look at each other like, what in the world?
Yeah. Well, it's a great series, Bill. I'd urge people to read it over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep, Bill Dries. Jeffrey, we do have news, by the way. University of North Carolina.
Yes, Jeff, they are denying that Jordan Hudson has indeed been banned from the facility. So, you know, more Chapel Bill drama.
We'll pick up the drama next week.
Yes.
Have a great weekend, everybody. What's coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Anthony Sain will join their program. Blake Topmeyer, Eric Kastein going to join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb will be the game at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday. For now, work is done.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.